Hello there, and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. By any measure, my next guest has lived a very interesting life. She was born in Ireland, she learned to sing in London, painted sets in Africa, and often would perform up to 200 shows a year when she lived in Berlin. She plays the harp, she's sung opera, and she's currently penning her memoir. I met her recently at an event where all of the volunteers for this year's Noosa International Film Festival were meeting. Hilary O'Neill introduced herself as a judge's wife. I hope you enjoy listening to the podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it.
Well, I grew up in a small town on the north coast of Ireland. I was sent away to boarding school when I was fairly young. Nobody in the town knows me or can remember me because I've been away for years. But my brother and sister still live around there, and all my cousins and so on. Then I went to London at an early age because, I went to art school first in Ireland, and then I did painting and went to London because I've always wanted to sing, but people say, oh, you can't go on the stage.
Why not?
Oh, my goodness. You don't do that. Girls get married to somebody respectable, and that's it in my age, in that time. Anyway, I didn't listen to anybody, so I went off to London and found a fantastic singing teacher, Gustav Sacher, who was well known and really lovely. He and his wife, Mila, they used to teach me singing. I also got sick of London at one stage and just went off travelling to Africa, worked in the theatre in South Africa for a while, painting sets. I had the address of an opera singer who my teacher taught, who sang for the opera in Pretoria. He said, oh, they're looking for painters and you've been to art school, you might as well, you know, see if you can get some work there. So I went along and I had no idea. I just paint sets. I'd never done it in my life, but I just sort of bullshitted my way into the job.
We've covered a lot of territory here, so I just want to kind of take it, you know, baby step by baby step. When you started with those singing lessons in London, did your were your family aware that you were starting to take those lessons?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I told them, yeah.
And sure. They still wanted to discourage you from taking that path?
Oh, no, they didn't discourage me. They just didn't particularly encourage me, you know. That was it. But they knew that my mother said, oh, you children just went wild anyway, so.
What did she mean by that? Did you have other siblings that had kind of gone off the rails or something?
No, not at all. They were very sensible. I was the one that wasn't sensible.
Are you the black sheep? If people talked about you?
Suppose you would say that, yes. Well, I suppose there were all sorts of suppressed artists in my family, certainly my mother did paint a little bit and everybody played some sort of instrument, so as they do in Ireland. But I didn't just break the mold, I smashed it. Yeah, when I went to London, I also went to art school, so that was acceptable to go to art school. I contacted this singing teacher and I worked with him and then went to Africa for a couple of years and then came back to him as well. That's what I wanted to do, and that's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to sing.
Be up on stage?
Not necessarily. I've got this sort of two parts to my character. I'm actually very shy, but once I'm up there singing, I'm fine. I forget about all the shyness because I know that's what I do. I never wanted to be admired by hundreds and thousands of people. That's not been me. I just love to sing and I love to express and I love to see people getting enjoyment from it. But to me, I don't think it's a big ego trip.
I know a lot of performers are very similar. They can be introverts and quite shy, but once they're behind a microphone or they're up on stage or they have an instrument, then they kind of transform and they become someone else on stage. Do you remember the very first time you got paid for a gig? The first time they said, we'd like Hilary to perform at this particular concert or show?
I do actually very well, because I was living in West Berlin at the time and I'd met up with two Scottish fellows and they said, oh, let's get a little trio together. So they played guitars and I didn't play anything at the time. I didn't think about the harp then, but I sang. So the three of us, we called ourselves the Gurriers, which means the yokels in Ireland. Anyway, the Gurriers, they had worked for the Air Force, and that's why they were in West Berlin. So they said, oh, we've got a gig for you And I, how'll I remember all these words by next Thursday? And, you know, but anyway, we went up there and I remember going out in front of all these military people. All of a sudden, they started clapping. And when I went off stage, Colin said, "They really like you, Hillary." I couldn't believe it. Anyway, that was the first time.
What was it like living in Berlin during the 70s?
Oh, it was terrific. I loved it. It was terrific.
What did you love about it?
It was sort of safe, you know. You'd go through the corridor through the GDR to Hamburg or something and you feel, oh, this is weird. But then you come back to Berlin, you feel all safe and enclosed like in a great big womb. But everybody in the music or the art scene, they all knew each other. And I love Berlin. I've been back living there for another 15 years. It's a different city now, but it's absolutely fantastic.
Since the wall came down?
Yeah, it's like two different places. But funnily enough, the people who lived in West Berlin still live in West Berlin, and the people who lived in East Berlin mostly still live there in East Berlin.
What do you think it was that drew so many artistic people to Berlin? Because my understanding is too, David Bowie spent a lot of time there, people like Joe Jackson spent a lot of time there writing. And
well, I sort of landed there. I went to Hamburg first through a relationship. Running away from that, I went to Berlin. I met some Americans and was able to rent a room from. And anyway, I went to West Berlin, I think because the arts are greatly encouraged in Germany. I know from the painting side of things, young painters like myself, we used to get so many Aufträge, contracts a year, which were paid by the state. And like you'd be told, you know, more or less guidelines what to do, what sort of piece of art they wanted.
So they were commissioning you to create.
They would commission something, but there were guidelines. What it was couldn't be just all what you wanted to do. So, but anyway, these paintings or whatever they were bought, paid for out of these grants, and they were hung in places like public buildings, police barracks, the Dole offices, and all the rest of it. Also, music concerts are part of everyday life there, where in Australia it's sport because this is an outdoor environment. There, everybody goes to concerts. That's why I've had quite a bit of success with my concerts in Germany.
Tell me about how you were filling your days there in Berlin, because so you're an artist and you're a singer, you're a performer. What was a typical day like for you back then?
Well, I worked in lots of theatres, painting sets, and then in the evening I'd go and sing in clubs, in folk clubs. Mostly, I went to singing lessons as well at the conservatorium. Funnily enough, I went back to sing with a pianist. We were doing some German Lieder a few years ago when I was back the second time living in Berlin. And he was actually in the same studio as the professor that I'd gone to before. I came to Australia in 1984. And of course, I needed work straight away. And I got some work painting in theatres. I did all the set painting for the opening of the Queensland Performing Arts Theatre and the Queensland Theatre Company. And then I moved down to Adelaide and worked for the State Opera there. After a few years, I didn't stay all that long there. I went to university in Adelaide, got a music degree, sang in the opera there. And then I decided to, when my children were grown up, or had left home, then I decided to go back to Germany.
In 84, what brought you to Australia?
Well, at the time, the Russians were putting all sorts of weird and awful weapons stationed all around Berlin, and everybody was beginning to freak out. And my husband said, had met somebody in the supermarket one day who was actually going to emigrate to Australia, and he said, "Would you like to go to Australia too?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know, I've never thought about it." He had actually, this group of people that were going, asked if we'd like to join them, and I said, "Well, I'm not really a group person, I'd rather apply on my own." And their group never got in. They were being sponsored by Cairns, was it his name? Some sort of a politician here in anyway, who fell from favour in the meantime, and they never got into Australia. Whereas we did.
And when did you return to Berlin? So you said you weren't here for very long. The kids had left the nest and then you returned. Mm. So why go back?
Well, I went back on holiday to Ireland and stopped off in Berlin. And an old friend of mine there who I used to sing with years ago, he said, Hilary, if you want to do some concerts here, you have to be based here. And I thought, oh, well, why not? So I went back, sorted out things and sold a few things off and got the fare together to go back again. When I arrived, David had decided that he would have to think about it, whether he wanted to come, because he didn't speak German or anything. So, fine, we're a modern couple. So he then eventually came a few months later, but I went out there and a friend of mine had a flat and she was in the States at the time, so I got the key from a neighbour and moved in there, but it was just empty. I'm writing a book at the minute, so all about all this, so it's all in the book, called Travels with My Harp and a Little Blue Car.
How do you recall a lot of incidences and things that happened to you? Have you made notes during your time? Have you?
Funnily enough, I thought I would have to look up my notes. I did take notes for quite a few years. The funny things and the really strange incidents have all stuck in my memory really well. And I just have to look down at my booking lists and think, there, like I was writing last night about a strange place called Schlalach outside of Berlin. And that was really very strange. We arrived there, I had a concert booked there and it was in the middle of winter. It was very cold. I'd never been there and I don't think anybody else had ever been there to Schlalach. So when we knocked on the door, the Pfarrer, the minister's wife, opened the door. She'd probably been just waiting there all day for us to arrive, and it was so exciting. I must just mention that in Germany, because very few people, relatively few people go to church, they're all churches are used as concert venues. So anyway, the Pfarrer's wife opened the door, and she was quite a gregarious sort of woman, and her husband, on the other hand, was very gentle and shy, and he kept sort of patting her hand to calm her down a bit. And anyway, they said, oh, we've knocked a hole in the church wall to put a heater through. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I went in there, and it was freezing cold. And, you know, the harp does go out of tune, very cold.
Well, I want to talk to you about the harp and when you picked it up.
Well, I have had a cousin who's dead now, but he used to play harp with the chieftains, Derek Bell. And Derek was on tour somewhere. I said, I'd love to learn the harp. And he said, well, why don't you? And I said, well, oh, I don't think I could. He said, of course you could. He said, go and rent one. So I did. I found a very good harp maker in Adelaide, up in the Adelaide Hills. He was a very sweet man, and I had very little money at the time. And he said, look, Hilary, you can have the harp. Take it home and you can pay me off. He said, I absolutely trust you, which was wonderful. And I did gigs about a week after I had the harp. I knew how to play one chord or two chords. Yeah. And I was standing up on the stage singing, because I sang much louder than the harp, you see. So that covered it up. And I heard somebody right up the front saying, oh, her hands look like a bunch of bananas on the harp.
The harp's an interesting instrument, though. I mean, it's not as agile and as mobile as a violin, is it? I mean, it takes some lugging around, doesn't it?
That's true, yeah. Well, it does. Well, it's 11 kilos, my harp. It's not a concert harp, it's a Celtic harp, but it comes up to about my shoulder when I'm standing. And you can get all sorts and shapes and sizes of harps.
Tell me about a typical show. So when someone comes to see you, Hilary, up on stage, you sing, you play the harp. Are there other accompanying musicians that support you?
No, usually that's why I took up the harp, because I was sick of trying to get people to practice. The good musicians don't want to practice and the bad ones want to practice forever. So I thought I'll become independent. I'll get a harp. But I did sing with jazz bands and then I sang a lot of Lieder, with mostly German Lieder, with pianists. But, you know, that's a difficult thing to do, because you have to have a grand piano. You have to have it tuned before each concert, and you need to have accommodation for a pianist. And so on, touring with that sort of setup takes a lot of, you don't have much profit at the end. And so I thought, well, people love Irish music in Germany. And I developed a program called Lieder, Legenden und Geschichten aus Irland, Songs, Stories and Legends of Ireland. And I would tell the stories in German, and I quite often wrote them in verse form as well, because it's much easier for me to remember, would explain, and especially in East Germany, where they most people or the older people don't speak German, English, I mean. Most of the older people don't speak English. So they really enjoyed the programs because they were brought into the songs. They knew what I was singing about. And Germans mostly are very curious people. They want to know exactly what's going on.
How many shows do you think you've done in your lifetime? I'm just trying to get a gauge, like how often, you know, when you say you tour and you sing, like how many gigs would you do a year, for example, Hilary?
Well, I used to do about 200 concerts a year. And then I sort of gradually pruned it down a bit because, you know, the audience numbers came up. And so the concert numbers went down a bit, but about 200 a year. Yeah, well, there are a lot of beautiful venues in Germany. I was playing in castles, churches, museums, anywhere with a lovely acoustic.
Sounds like you have a real affinity for Germany and for Berlin and for performing in Europe and your home country of Ireland. Is Noosa a long-term kind of settlement for you?
Yes. Yeah. I've rewired here. And I'm not saying retired. I've rewired. And
the environment, it would be like chalk and cheese, though, wouldn't it? But considering where you grew up.
Oh, it's beautiful here. I'm in paradise. I think it's the most wonderful place to live. And this is just right for this stage of my life. You know, you can't go hurtling around autobahns in your 80s. I mean, I'm not 80 yet, but I'm heading that way. So I don't want to take my life and, you know, risk my life every day of the year.
But you're still doing a few gigs.
Well, yes, I do concerts, but at the minute I've got nothing in view. I'm just writing something at the minute.
Tell me the goal for the book. So obviously there was a plan. You thought about this because you said you did keep notes.
Well, you know, John, in my life I've never really planned anything too well. Things just happen in my life, and I just think if this is right, this book, it'll happen. And if not, I've got a nice sort of memoir there for my children. I'm not really all that fussed. Anybody I've shown it to at the minute, which has been three people, they've really enjoyed reading what I write. But, you know, it's just written from my heart. It's no great work of literature.
Do you want to read his
passage? All right. He's an old fellow, to be precise, 84 years old. I ask him about his limp. Thought it might be from the war. Always an interesting topic in Germany. Just had my second new knee replacement. Have a look. And there, standing in the middle of the church, he drops his trousers to around his ankles, revealing a pair of bright red boxer shorts with white spots. Neat scars, I reassure him, and I do like your choice of breeches. Nobody else is here to second my opinion, and he's quite oblivious in a naive sort of way to the fact that I find this rather unusual behaviour in a church, or anywhere for that matter. Well, maybe at a stag party or at a rugby club booze-up, but certainly not preceding my concert in a Reformed church on the north coast of East Friesland. Fortunately for my pristine reputation, the audience hasn't yet rolled up. David is off parking our car, as the locals could object to a bright blue Citroen Berlingo placed among their deceased loved ones in the graveyard surrounding the church. This is a peaceful little village, almost on the border with Holland. In fact, it is so peaceful that there are no shops, just the small red brick houses so typical of the area, and of course the church. But the people must eat. Perhaps they grow it all themselves. Turnips, pigs, potatoes, truly the good life. Then off to the church of an evening for a striptease show. My fantasies are interrupted by David's return on foot. He is carrying a few boxes of CDs, which he almost drops when he catches sight of the Kuster standing there in his red and white spotted boxer shorts. I'm sure this will interest you, Dave. My husband has dreadful knees and is terrified of the op. Look at Herr Gribble's new knee. Just had them done and is fit as a fiddle. So before my 50th concert of the season, we have a knee operation discussion. Then to demonstrate the strength of his prosthetics, Herr Gribble pushes the enormously heavy altar to one side of the aisle to make way for my portable stage. Fortunately, he remembers to first pull up his breeks. While David sets up the lighting, the old man shows me to my dressing room, which doubles up as the broom cupboard. There's a prevalent smell of fly spray in it. This does worry me a bit, but then I think how nice it is that they thought of ridding the place of creepy crawlies, especially for my visit.
Do you have a goal in terms of when you want to finish that, or is it like come what may?
Oh, well, I don't like to do things slowly. I do it. It has to be done in a month or a couple of months.
The book, you want to finish the book in a month?
A couple of months, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Do you, are you disciplined with your writing? Do you set yourself a goal of writing X amount of pages or words a day?
No, I just let it happen.
It just flows out of you?
Yeah, I just sit down when I've got time and do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, life is very busy in Noosa. There are all sorts of things like walks and kayaking and yoga classes.
You do all of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, good on you.
And all these things that one has to do, and also meeting up friends and... Yeah, so I do try to make the time.
I really appreciate you coming in and sharing some of your stories. I know there's probably a stack more, but some of your stories with us today. Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you, John. Been lovely.
Hope you enjoyed that. Hilary O'Neill was our guest today, Conversations in Noosa. Remember, there are two fresh podcasts every Monday and Thursday on our In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations. And if you listen to the podcast today via Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher or Wooshka, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Until next time, take care.